Okay, so yesterday we had discussed that the law involving the mesis, the seducer to Avodah Zarah, is fundamentally and categorically different than anybody else, certainly anybody else on the list of the 18 who could be liable for skila, and that is to say that we go out of our way to attempt to entrap him. You remember that we went through the scenarios of hiding the witnesses behind the obstacles. And this is based on a verse in the Torah which says that there are five different prohibitions that all relate to having compassion or trying to exonerate or trying to justify somehow the actions of this individual. Lo tovelo, velo tishmaylav, velo tachosin chaylav, velo tachmo, velo tachase alav. Now, here's the ironic part, Martin, is that when you get, you know, in terms of the quantitative aspect of this, the mesis is somebody who works, you know, what you would call retail style. He just works on an individual basis. He's not going for big numbers. Then there's a different category of what we call the mediach. He's trying to go after a whole city and to try to turn that city into a bastion of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry. And when it comes to the mediach, we actually treat him in a much more lenient way. We treat him as we would treat any other individual, that we don't attempt to entrap this person. And it's a very fascinating thing. You would think that the latter case, the guy who's going after the city, is a much greater threat. And after all, you know, his ambitions, so to speak, more nefarious, but are, you know, at a much larger scale. But here's the point, really, that the mesis, because he's only working on the individual level, is that we're particularly concerned for the insidious quality of this behavior, right? He's not, you know, going to the city elders or whatever it is. He's just trying to pick off, you know, unsuspecting, simple people. And in a certain sense, that makes him an even more nefarious kind of a figure. So again, if the mediach is going after the city, the Mishnah goes and says that he has to formulate his appeal, as it were, towards idolatry, belashon rabim, using the plural. Ha-mediach ze omer nelech v'na'avod avodah zarah. Nelech v'na'avod, of course, being the first person plural, we shall go and observe and worship Avodah Zarah. So that is a very important distinction between the mesis and the mediach. And just to review a point that we made last night, but of central importance in this entire discussion, is that it makes no difference whatsoever with respect to both the mesis as well as the mediach if they're successful or not. Right? The very attempt to seduce people, whether it's on an individual scale, the mesis, or on the municipal scale with respect to the mediach, the very attempt is that for which the individual is being punished, as opposed to achieving success. And he can't come and say, hey, nobody listened to me anyway. I was a thoroughly unsuccessful spokesperson for Avodah Zarah. That makes no difference whatsoever. It's the attempt itself that we penalize. The next and final case, the 17th out of 18th in Mishnah, the next case in the Mishnah gets its own chapter, which is the Ben Sorer Umora, the rebellious son, is the Mechashef. The Mechashef is the sorcerer. So sorcery, by its very definition, is a little bit hard to define. You know, what constitutes sorcery, and what just constitutes, you know, various kinds of, you know, astrology, trying to predict the future. The lines can be somewhat blurry. So the example given in our Mishnah has to do with an individual who's like looking out over an agricultural setting, actually with gourds or squash, and he's able to actually, without actually coming into physical contact with the vegetation, to get them to all gather in one place. It'd be as if, let's say there was, squash all over this room, and I said, you know, when I'm going to say the word Sigismund, then all the squash will magically gather together and appear right here in front of me. So that is, if a person actually did that, again, I'm no expert in sorcery, which I suppose is a good thing, but if a person, you know, graduated from Hogwarts with a PhD, you know, and was able to do that, so that would actually be, a problem, and that person would be liable for skila. But if the person simply makes it appear that they're doing this, but they're not actually doing it, so then they're only liable for what we call makas mardis. They get lashes at a rabbinic level. They violate a prohibition, but it won't give them a death penalty. And those people are called ochzei einayim. So read the Mishnah in a second, but now you're obviously wondering, what about magicians, right? Don't magicians, do this, or they give the appearance that they're making things happen that are illusory, that are not actually real. And we just had a magician. I just allowed a magician to come to perform for our children. Maybe we should have lashed him after the show, you know, and traumatized all the children. No, so obviously there's a difference. There's a whole discussion about magic, but when it's clear, the person isn't promoting himself as a sorcerer. The person is saying, you know, I'm a magician. I'm telling you in advance that this is not real. So then it's a very different kind of scenario. So the Mishnah says, HaMechashev, the sorcerer, osa ma'isa chayev. If he's actually able to get the squash to come to one place, then he's liable. Aviloha ochez es ha'inayim, somebody who's creating illusions where it just appears that the squash is actually getting together. Rabbi Kiva Omer Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, shnayim loktin kishuin. You could have two people who are involved in this process. This is the example that they give of getting the squash to gather in one place. Echad loket pater ve'echad loket chayev. Ha'osa ma'isa chayev. The one who actually did this is liable. Ha'ochez es ha'inayim, but one who causes it to appear. They're not actually getting the gourds or the squash to gather in one place, but they're able to create this kind of an optical illusion. They're pater. Pater here means aval asr. It's still prohibited. And again, the reason that you don't get lashes on a Torah level is because it's what we call lav shenitan laz haras misas bezdin. That it's a lav which is subject to misas bezdin, that if he actually did the maisa, he would be liable for the death penalty. So we don't give him lashes at a Torah level, but still at a rabbinic level, we do give the person lashes because he's obviously getting pretty close to committing an act of sorcery itself. So as I said, the Mishnah had 18 of the 36 possible offenders who are liable for capital punishment get skila. 10 of them get sreifa, 6 of them get chenek, strangulation, and 2 of them get hereg or decapitation. So the vast majority, right, fully half of them, but much more so than any of the other three, are for skila. The 18th one on the list is the Ben Sora Mora, and like I said, that's not included in this chapter. We just finished the 7th chapter. That's actually the beginning of the 8th chapter, a chapter which is entirely dedicated to a study of the Ben Sora Mora. It's a fascinating case about an individual who appears to be on the wrong track, but hasn't done anything that necessarily would be liable for kind of a capital penalty, and yet this person does get a capital punishment. Dan, go ahead.